Let us not have questions now. Let us just dive into chapter 5. You'll understand the connection between these chapters. Then when we pause for questions, then you'll miss that somehow. The questions you can always ask later. So, Arjuna begins. Did anybody look at the sections of chapter 5 and try to divine them yet? No? Okay, so anyway, you try to do that today and tomorrow. I know you won't have much time, but try to do it. Squeeze it in. It will only take you maybe 20 or 30 minutes. You're just reading the verses and looking for the sections. That's all. Because that will help you to understand what's going on. Because Burijan had to do that on his own. He didn't have any study guide. He's the one who wrote this. And I also did that myself. And I make all my students do this. Plus, that helps you to get some realization. When you're struggling to understand, somebody just gives the sections to you. Oh, okay, all right. First verses or transcendental knowledge, then the next one. But when you're trying to read it and figure out what the hell is Krishna saying here? What is this section? Is it from 1 to 12 or is it 1 to 10? Then you're straining your brain. And that's what you need to do. Then when there's some juice comes when you squeeze the brain, some juice will come. If you never strain the brain, you'll never get this juice, And that will just kind of dry up. Then you have a dry brain. Okay, Arjuna vacha sanyasam karmaram krishna purna yogam cha shamsasi yatraya etayorekam tanme bruhi sunishchitam. Arjuna said, oh Krishna, first of all you asked me to renounce work, karma sanyas. And then again you recommend work with devotion, karma yoga. Now will you kindly tell me definitely which of the two is more beneficial? So this is very similar to the third chapter, but there's some kind of closer to, he's using these terms now. Not just using buddhi and yoga, or buddhi and karma, but he's using karma sannyas and karma nishkam karma yoga. And he says, etayor ekam. Again he says, tell me of the two. Right, etayor is in the shasti. It's in the genitive. Of the two, tell me ekam, just one. Which is best, Shreya. Yat Shreya, that which is the better one. Tanme bruhi, tell me. Sunishchitam, definitely. Really, Krishna. Definitely, Nishchitam means definitely, and su nishchitam. Come on, the ultimate, siddhanta. So, it seems that Arjuna is confused again. Even after Krishna, he spoke all of chapter 3 and all of chapter 4, and Arjuna is still a little bewildered here. So why is that? Why is Arjuna still bewildered? Why is he still confused about these two things? About renouncing work, which is sannyas, or the jnana stage of renunciation, and nishkam karma, wherein one renounces the fruits of his work. Why does he ask this question? If you can answer this, then you'll understand the connections between the connecting points between chapter 4 and 5. This is how you understand the connections between the chapters. You have to ask yourself, why is this first verse being spoken? And then if you answer that, then you understand the connection between the two verses, between the two chapters. What would you say?
Actually, up to the 41, he was nicely telling you the knowledge of the benefits of transcendental knowledge.
Right.
42, he said, armed with you and fight.
Yes.
And then Arjuna is very nicely coming up to 41, and then 42 again he got instruction that now you fight. This is right. Again.
Yeah, basically that's true. He was stressing on so much knowledge, right? And then at the end, he told him to fight again. Here with yoga, it means Nishkam Karma Yoga. But there's something more. Or maybe there's another, there may be even more angles than I see. But let us see who else can say something.
I must go to a forest somewhere and find a guru and take his instruction. That is also an imperative. You should do this.
No, but he already accepted Krishna as his guru, right? His guru is right on the chariot with him. But that's a worthy, you know, attempt to understand. Could have some relative truth there. Anything else? Anyone else can think of something?
Krishna is telling Nishkam Karma Yoga is to get knowledge, but he is thinking that I am actually. For me, there is no need to do work because I am already.
Seems like Arjuna wants to do both. Be a jnani and then a worker. Transcendental worker. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments here that, but karma, sannyas, and nishkam karma have opposite natures, Krishna. Just like moving and non-moving living entities. Right? The non-moving, I guess, would be the jnani. The karma sannyas means a jnani. And the karma yogi is the moving living entity. They're completely different. Is it possible? Is it possible to do them both simultaneously? Should one in knowledge do karma sannyas or nishkam karma yoga? I've not understood your intention clearly. So please tell me what I should do. So should a person who has acquired knowledge work or not work? Which is better? So when Krishna says Punar Yoga, he's saying karma yoga or nishkam karma yoga. And sannyas, karma sannyas, sannyasam karmanam Krishna, means to give up work, which is the platform of knowledge. So Krishna was stressing knowledge so much, but he was stressing knowledge in the context of working, wasn't he? So you would have thought that Arjuna would have already gotten this idea and understood what he was saying. But Arjuna's confusion is for our benefit. Because Krishna has to tell now again the same points, but in some slightly different way. So, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has described that in text 41, it is mentioned yoga sannyasta karmanam, that one should do karma sannyas. Yoga sannyasta karmanam, like do karma sannyas yoga, jnana sinchana sankshaya, and with this knowledge then you will cut your doubts. So, and then he further says, atmavantam na karmani, that a person who's situated in the self, he doesn't work. Na karmani. Nibbananti, dananjaya. But he's bound. He could have thought of it in such a way.
is with renunciation of fruits of actions, it's mentioned in the translation.
Yeah, of course.
It's not renunciation of work.
Yes. But, you know, Arjuna, maybe he's not a Sanskrit scholar, like Prabhupada. He hears yoga, sannyasa, karma, no. Yeah, give up the karma. Atmavantam, the karmani. Those who are self-situated, they shouldn't work. And then in the next verse, it says, atishta, tishta, bharata, get up and fight. So in this way, Vishwanath Chakravarti has revealed to us the thoughts of Arjuna, why he was confused. So, now, Prabhupada's commentary. You should always study the first and the last commentary of each chapter, because it's packed with conclusions. In this fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that work in devotional service is better than dry mental speculation or kamasinas. Devotional service, or nishkam karma yoga, is easier than the latter, because being transcendental in nature, it frees one from reaction. In the second chapter, it's going all the way back now, preliminary knowledge of the soul and its entanglement in the material body were explained. How to get out of this material engagement by Buddha Yoga was also explained therein. In the third chapter, it was explained that a person who is situated on the platform of knowledge no longer has any duties to perform. Atmarati, Atmatritta. Right? And in the fourth chapter, the Lord told Arjuna that all kinds of sacrificial work culminate in knowledge. However, at the end of the fourth chapter, the Lord advised Arjuna to wake up and fight, being situated in perfect knowledge. Therefore, by simultaneously stressing the importance of both work in devotion and inaction in knowledge, Krishna has perplexed Arjuna and confused his determination. Arjuna understands that renunciation in knowledge involves cessation of all kinds of work performed as sense activities. Right? Renunciation with knowledge means stopping work as selfish work. But if one performs work in devotional service, then how is work stopped? But actually, that was the whole purpose of the last chapter. Right? We said that Arjuna was telling, you know, you are the Brahman in this sacrifice, Arjuna, and your Gandiva bow is the spoon. Your arrows are the ghee, and the Kaurava army is the fire. Now, perform your yajna, and you'll be able to work without any reactions to sin. That was the whole crux of the whole last chapter. So many verses, dozens of verses. And still, Arjuna, because Krishna, you know, he said a few words at the end, yoga sannyasa karmana, ganesan chana sangshayam. He got it. Threw him off. In other words, he thinks that sannyas, or renunciation and knowledge, should be altogether free from all kinds of activity, because work and renunciation appear to him to be incompatible. He appears not to have understood that work and full knowledge is non-reactive, even though Krishna told him so many times, and is therefore the same as inaction. He inquires again, therefore, whether he should cease work altogether or work with full knowledge. Okay, now Krishna answers. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Sanyasa Karma Yogascha Nishreyasa Karaubo Tayostu Karma Sanyasa Karma Yogo Fashishyate. The personality of Godhead replied, the renunciation of work and work in devotion are both good for liberation. Nishreyasaya karau ubhau. They're both good. But of the two, tayas two, work in devotion is better than karma sannyas. Karma sannyasat, better than karma sannyas. Karma yoga vishishyate. Karma yoga is better. Special. Right? It has a vishesh lakshana. It's vishishyate, superior. Why is it superior? Because working in renunciation strengthens one's knowledge. And if one renounces his work prematurely, he can fall down. It's dangerous. One in knowledge who works will become more fixed in knowledge, because he'll get more realization from doing nishkam karma. There's no loss. There's no obstacle. Even the person's completely situated on jnana nishti, he's totally self-realized, he can still work in nishkam karma. And he'll just get more realization. But a sannyasi who's given up his worldly duties and he's not purified in heart, then that impurity will be a huge obstruction for his advancement. That will stop him from getting knowledge. This impurity in the heart. And can he remove it with karma? Can the sannyasi who has renounced karma sannyasi, can he, if he finds that he's not so pure, can he go back and start doing nishkam karma again? It's forbidden for sannyasis to do that. He's not supposed to do that. Because someone who's given up his work, then it's like avantashi. Someone who's given up, he's vomited something, and he's going to eat that again. So it's like going backwards. So therefore, Krishna is saying, karma yoga vishishyate. That's better than karma sannyas. Tayos tu karma sannyasa karma yoga vishishyate. They're both good. Sannyasa karma yogascha. Nishrayasa karau ubau. Karau. Okay. They're both nice. But of the two, karma yoga is better. Prabhupada writes in his commentary, therefore, jnana, or knowledge that one is not this material body, but spirit soul, is not sufficient for liberation. One has to act in the status of spirit soul. Prabhupada's kind of pushing it even more, doing bhakti. Not just for purification, but acting as a liberated soul means working for the Supreme. Alright, text 3.
Gaya sanitya sannyasi yo na dveshti na kangshati nirvanva hi mahabaho sukam bandhat pramuchyate.
One who neither hates nor desires the fruits of his activities is known to be nitya sannyasi, always renounced. Such a person, free from all dualities, nirvanva, he very easily overcomes material bondage. Pandhat pramuchyate, and is completely liberated. Pramuchyate. Right? That's a little added power there to the much. Dhatu. Oh, mighty armed Arjuna, Mahabaho. So he calls him Mahabaho. Arjuna, you're powerful. So you'll be able to conquer the city of liberation with nishkam karma. You'll understand that actually later, the city of liberation, or the city of the material body, is described in this chapter. So someone might ask that, is it possible to achieve liberation, which is attained by the sannyasis, without entering into the sannyas ashram? And Krishna answers, know that a pure-hearted nishkam karma yogi is always a sannyasi, Arjuna.
You should understand it as such. A pure-hearted Nishkam Karma Yogi is Nitya Sannyasa. He is always renounced. And he, Yo Nadveshtati Nakankshati. And you, I know you've heard that before. Right? That's in chapter 14, isn't it? When someone's on Brahma Bhuta platform, then he's like that. So now he's talking of the same thing about the Nishkam Karma Yogi.
Is it possible to attain liberation?
Yeah, which is generally attained by the sannyasis for someone without taking the sannyas ashram or the sannyas order. I mean, to formally take sannyas and renounce one's duties. So, because of purity of a heart, by performing Nishkam Karma Yoga, this Nishkam Karma Yogi is called Nitya Sannyasi. Actually, sannyas is two words, sat and nyas. Sat means the supreme, and nyas means to give up. So it means to give up everything for the supreme. So one who has renounced everything for the sake of the Supreme Lord, he is a sannyasi. Bhagavan ke liye. Text 4.
Sankhya yoga pritak bala pravadanti na panditaha ekam apyastita samyak ubhayor vindate phalam.
Only the ignorant speak of devotional service, karma yoga, as being different from the analytical study of the material world, sankhya. Those who are actually learned say that he who applies himself well to one of these paths achieves the results of both. So Krishna is saying, Arjuna, you've asked me the difference between these two paths, which one is better. But this is not a question at all. Because someone who is intelligent, he understands that he sees no difference between them. And he says that balaha, they're like children. He's calling Arjuna a fool. He said only fools and children ask such a question. A real pandit, he doesn't see any difference between these two. Yeah, pravadanti na panditaha. Sankhya yoga pratak bala. Sankhya yoga, in Sankhya yoga and karma yoga, pratak. Difference, pravadanti, they say, na pandita. Right? The pandits, they don't say that there's pratak, any difference between Sankhya or karma sannyas. Sankhya, see, I have to explain something here. Some of you may understand or some may not. Because Krishna is using different terms. And sometimes it's a little confusing. But you should know that, you know, the term jnana is a very big term, like an umbrella. Okay? And underneath here, you have a lot of different things going on. You have Jnana Yoga. You have Sankhya Yoga. Uh, different kinds of renunciation. You have karma sannyas. There's also other kinds of tapasvis. What else do we have? Or you just have the word sannyasi, right? Or sannyas. It also means knowledge, right? Realization.
Renunciation?
Well, yeah, renunciation. Or you can say tyag. There's the idea of knowledge and renunciation, right? Or knowledge and realization. And there's also the idea of like being disgusted with the material world and frustrated and like this, negating. Negating the relationships and the pleasures of the world. This all comes from this term jnana. It has a very broad, expansive meaning. As far as I understand, let's see, made a note. One of the limbs of Sankhya Yoga is sannyas. So when Krishna says Sankhya, it indicates one of its limbs, sannyas, in this verse. Because Krishna was talking, Arjuna asked about karma sannyas, and now Krishna uses the word Sankhya, but he's referring to the same thing. He's talking about renunciation of the work, karma sannyas. And you could say that Sankhya Yoga, my understanding was always that Sankhya Yoga is also a part of Jnana Yoga. Because it means analytical study of the material elements, the Mahabhutas, the Gyanendriyas, the Karmendriyas, the Mahatattva, right? All of those things. That's part of Jnana Yoga is also a very broad term and has different things underneath it. Renunciation, analytical study. The analytical study is meant to bring about renunciation. Okay, so don't get confused now with all these terms. So, there's actually two kinds of sannyas, external and internal. In other words, there's substance and form. The substance is internal and the form is external. Which is more important?
Substance.
The internal renunciation. Then, once that's there, the external renunciation will come naturally. And even if it doesn't come right away, the person doesn't care because he's renounced. He's internally renounced. So, nishkam karma is when someone is actually renounced internally from the fruits of his work. But he's still working. At least someone who's successful, accomplished nishkam karma yogi. And the karma sannyas is a person who has externally given up his duties in the world, his varnashram duties. Yeah? Now, hopefully, that person, the karma sannyasi, he should also be internally renounced. If he's not, he's going to have big problems. And even in our movement, we've seen that out of the 180 men who took sannyas, 100 of them fell down since the beginning of ISKCON. So, you know, it's even for the bhakti yogis, it's difficult. And what to speak if the person's a jnani? You know? He's going to have more problems. Like Vishwamitra or Shubhari and so many people, you know. Some slight agitation, some ankle bells, some fish. I mean, you know, seeing fish copulate is not so exciting. But it was enough to get Shabari Muni, you know, disturbed in his mind. So Prabhupada says, now, let's read his commentary. The aim of the analytical study of the material world is to find the soul of existence. The soul of the material world is Vishnu, or the Supersoul. And devotional service to the Lord entails service to that Supersoul. One process is to find the root of the tree, and the other is to water the root. Right, so Sankhya Yoga is to find the root, and Nishkam Karma is to water the root. The real student of Sankhya philosophy finds the root of the material Vishnu, and then in perfect knowledge engages himself in the service of the Lord. Therefore, in essence, there's no difference between the two, because the aim of both is Vishnu. Those who do not know the ultimate end say that the purpose of Sankhya and Karma Yoga are not the same. But one who is learned knows the unifying aim in these different processes. Okay. So he sees unity in diversification, you could say. Text 5. Yat samkhyai prapyate stanam tad yogera api gamyate ekam samkhyam cha yogam cha yapashyati sapashyati. One who knows that the position reached by means of analytical study can also be attained by devotional service, and who therefore sees analytical study and devotional service to be on the same level sees things as they are. Postanam means the place where one never falls. Ekam samkhyam cha yogam cha. He sees them as one. And that person, yapashyati sapashyati. Whoever sees like that, he actually sees. Not like the person who's bala, and he sees pratak, sankhya, karma yoga, right? But pravadanti, napandikaha. The pandits don't see, like, only bala and children. Because the children can only see the externals, not the unifying aim. Just like when children, they first see a car, they're wondering, how is it, you know, going on its own? Or maybe if they see a plane flying, they think it's like magic. Or even when they see a fan, they're mystified. How is that, you know? And then the father may pull the plug out of the wall, and then the child looks at it and it stops. And oh, look, father, it stopped. And then the father plugs it in again, and the child goes, oh, it started again. You know? Because children have a limited vision. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he quotes some verse from Kumaril Bhatta, who is a Mimamsaka wala, karma Mimamsaka. It said something about some sannyasis or don't have renunciation, they can fall down, something like this. But this Kumaril Bhatta, he was around, as far as I understood, during the time of Shankar, Adi Shankar. And he criticized Shankar. He called him a fool. Said, you're wearing big kopins, heavy kopins, showing how powerful you are in renunciation. But you're not even strong enough to carry a shika and a thread of a Brahmin. In other words, your renunciation is false. That's what it is. Text 6. Sanyasastu mahabaho dhukam aptu mayogataha yoga yukto munir brahma na charena digacchati. Merely renouncing all activities, yet not engaging in devotional service to the Lord, cannot make one happy. But a thoughtful person engaged in devotional service can achieve the Supreme without delay. Again, he says, na chirena digacchati. The person gets it quickly. Ayogataha means without nishkam karma yoga. So, sannyasas too, but merely renouncing one's work, O Mahabaho, dukkam aptum. He gets only suffering. He obtains distress. If he's a yogataha, if he's not linked up in karma yoga. But yoga yukto munir brahma, someone who is actually linked up with the Lord, who is performing his nishkam karma, he attains the Supreme very quickly. Brahma na charena adigacchati. So because of these reasons, Krishna is saying sannyas is problematic and shouldn't be taken. At least not prematurely. But the heart is purified by detached work. And if the heart is pure, then it will become more pure. So that ends the first section. That is a conclusion there. Prabhupada talks about Shankaracharya and Mayavadis in the commentary. So Vaishnava sannyasis, they perform so many activities, but they're all engaged to please the Lord. Where the Mayavadis, they stay away from all activity. They never take Mahaprasadam. You know, they're externally renounced. And the Vaishnava sannyasis can do so many things. Mayavadis sannyasis are engaged in Sankhya philosophy. And the Vaishnavas in Bhagavat philosophy. And he says the Vaishnavas and sannyasis who are engaged in devotional service are happy in the discharge of their transcendental duties. And they have the guarantee of ultimate entrance into the kingdom of God. But the Mayavadi sannyasis sometimes fall down from the path of self-realization and enter into material activities of philanthropic nature, which are nothing but material activities. Therefore, the conclusion is that those who are engaged in Krishna conscious activities are better situated than the sannyasis engaged in simple speculation about what is Brahman and what is not Brahman, although they too come to Krishna consciousness after many births, hopefully. Okay, so we can have some questions now. Either about chapter 4 or this section in chapter 5. Okay, you first.
So, karma sannyasi, on what basis is he supposed to take sannyasi?
What's that? Karma sannyasi is...
Karma sannyasi, which is recorded here, already said that if his heart is not purified, then he is going to have problem, he is going to have difficulty.
Right.
So
don't, keep it, don't keep it too close.
Yeah, on what basis he decides, actually, or like for karma sannyasi, that now he can take sannyasi, karma sannyasi, and then more karma sannyasi?
Well, I mean, there's different things. One is the guru may tell him. And, I mean, this question is also brought up in Jiva Dharma by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. I think it was Brajanath speaking to Babaji Maharaj. So, when is a man ready to renounce the world and take the fourth order? So he described that when the centripetal energy or the internal absorption overcomes the centrifugal energy or the external I will explain what these mean. The energy which causes one to look outwardly for the sense objects. When that energy overcomes, then the person's ready for sannyasa. In other words, centrifugal force is like when you tie a rock to a string and then you spin it around. Now, if you let go of the string, what happens? The rock goes outwards, right? Because there's some force. Right? That's centrifugal force. The centripetal force is the opposite. It's kind of like a whirlpool, and it brings the things inward. So when the person's consciousness is more internally absorbed on the Supreme, right? Internal spiritual energy, right? More than the senses which are always pulling him outside, to look for pleasure in the sense objects, then he's ready to renounce the world. Krishna doesn't go into so much detail here because this is Gita Upanishad. It's like sutras, basically. So that's one explanation. When the knowledge comes sufficiently in the heart and the person realizes that I'm not the body, and he's getting pleasure from within, and then he knows he's not dependent on the sense objects for his pleasure. He's not attracted to them. So this will come up. Now, in this chapter, Krishna describes exactly what you're asking for. Because he's describing when the Nishkam Karma Yogi comes to the point of liberation or Jnana Nishtha. And that's later in this chapter. And then there'll be a lot of discussion about that and more information.
One more thing. One is, like we saw the chart actually, like how the Nishkam Karma Yogi come to the Jnana Nishtha level.
Yeah.
But another person, like when we are talking about Sankhya Yoga or Jnana Yoga, so are there some people directly they jump over to Sankhya Yoga and keep and just doing analysis and then they get purified? That's my question.
But they have to be pure enough to begin that. And how do they get that pure?
Nishkam Karma Yoga.
Usually, yeah. Unless they have some other mystical process or whatever.
How this analytical study, it just purifies the person? Because it's an austere thing, the whole day is sitting and reading and that they were explaining.
That's one thing, but also the knowledge itself is liberating because then you can understand the difference between you and the material elements.
What about those kuta, bija and everything which is there in the heart? That get burned up by this kind of knowledge?
That is already been taken care of for that person. Mostly by Nishkam Karma. But maybe in his past life he did that. And now he's doing Sankhya Yoga. He's already... Maybe that's a possibility. But generally there'll be some desires and some attachment, and that has to be purified first before he begins Jnana Yoga in any form, whether it's Sankhya or whether it's just speculation.
In this connection, I had a question also. Often it is said that the activities or the services in devotional path, they purify a person. Mm-hmm. When we see that the study of the Shastra, especially the most sublime truths, more and more when one comes to know them, they purify sometimes far more than by physical exertion or physical activities. So, like he was asking now, whether the learning of the Shastra and knowledge of such things will purify a person. Because of ignorance, a person is repeatedly, monotonously doing the same activities in the world. But when one comes across the more and more sublime truths, then they actually purify him far more fastly, very quickly than a person engaged in activity. Is it not true?
More than a person who does what?
Like this is often said that by the one can...
By his activities.
Yeah.
But nishkam karma activities. Well, Prabhupada said work now, samadhi later. Right? So first that shows that in bhakti there's work. Right? And doing the needful, for the higher cause. In the beginning, when there's lots of rajas, then there's stress on activity. Because that purifies, it engages the rajas in a healthy way, so it doesn't just build up and explode within the person. Later, when the person's in goodness, he still will work, but he will work with more knowledge, with more detachment, and in our case, with more devotion. So then his motive is not just to work out his passion, but to, out of attraction for the Lord and service to the mission of the Guru. He feels inspired inside his heart. So, now we're trying to look at activity and study, right? Which is the topic here. And probably you're thinking more in terms of activity and study in our bhakti school, I think, right? So, first of all, we should know that there are similarities of the principles, but then there are some differences. So in our discussion, if we're going to just focus on bhakti, because we're bhakti yogis, then we can say that the work is not only nishkam karma, but it's bhakti karma or Krishna karma. So not only it's purifying, it also helps to bring devotion. The purification brings knowledge and realization. And the activity also brings attraction to Krishna. Our work is also supported with hearing and chanting about Krishna, which you could say is knowledge, but it's also just itself is a form of yoga, and it's a kind of hearing about Krishna. You're learning about Krishna, but you're also learning how Krishna is so wonderful and kind and sweet and loving and friendly and beautiful. And in this way, you're also falling in love with the Supreme. So, we have different components and they're all used together. While we're working, both to purify ourselves and to purify others, we're also hearing about Krishna, and we're also learning about the philosophy that Krishna's speaking. So both are purifying. I think if you like just gave the Gita to a person, especially in the beginning, and if he didn't do any service, he wouldn't understand it, you know? Because he wouldn't be getting purified enough to get realization of what either Krishna or even Prabhupada, what Prabhupada's saying. You know? So they support each other. There's a kind of, you know, symbiosis, synergy of these different things. Now, if you have a person and you just make him work and work and work and work more and wash the pots and go out and do this and buy stuff and fix the cars, and then he never studies the books, he may also leave. Although he may have gotten some purification and some realization, but Prabhupada said also that my disciples have one fault. They don't read my books enough. So, and also many of them left, especially after Prabhupada left. And he also said directly that if one doesn't read all of my books, then he will fall down. Because one has to know, why am I doing this? You know, what is the goal of this? And exactly how is the process happening? And what's the next step? And what am I going through now? And what do I have to do next? Like this. Because then the person feels more inclined to continue if he knows what he's doing. And Prabhupada said that when there's knowledge in the yajna, then one actually, that's the benefit. When he does it for the objective of self-realization. If one's just working, he can very easily forget what is the objective of our process if he doesn't hear what it is and about it. So I can't really say that, you know, one purifies more than another, but it seems like they're both necessary for everyone, because if you and they're both like mutually dependent on one another, because I've seen, you know, many young devotees, they join the temple. I've been in many temples and lived in maybe 10 countries over the last 30 years. And, you know, a young man joins, he's very enthusiastic, and we just work him to death. And then we send him on the marathon. And then he never comes back. It happens a lot, you know. The person's like the ace bhakta of the temple. We send them on Sankirtan for the marathon, and a lot of the times they don't come back because we didn't give them enough knowledge. We didn't train them enough in the Siddhanta. And then if you have one sitting around and it's just studying all the time, and if he never does any seva, he's going to become proud and lazy, and he won't realize, and then his mind will just, you know, meditate on women and money and whatever. So there has to be a balance of these things. Now, Prabhupada said in general that the morning and evening class is sufficient for most devotees. But if the person's a preacher, then he has to also study at least for an hour a day, minimum. Better 2 or 3 hours, like that. That's the general idea of the balance. And each person has to balance himself. Just as we balance ourselves with the sense objects, we have to balance our work and our study also until we feel satisfied. When I was a Sankirtan devotee, I would every day sit down for an hour in the middle of the day and read the Bhagavad Gita. And I don't think very many of my godbrothers were doing that. You know. Maybe my results weren't as big. But later I found that because I was so enlivened by the philosophy, I started doing just as big as collecting as much and distributing as much books, as many books as everybody else. And sometimes I was so enlivened I forgot to eat. Take prasadam. So, anyway, it's up to each devotee to find out what his balance is in that in regard.
Does it mean that a person who is acting in devotional service will be person who is acting in devotional service will be getting a better understanding of scriptures over a period of time? He should be getting?
Yes. Oh, yes. If you read the Bhagavad Gita now and then again in 10 years, you're going to like say, wow, I didn't see that before.
That's a necessity?
Yeah.
That's not a, it's
that
a
happens. That will open. Shastra is alive. It's not just a book. It's book Bhagavat and person Bhagavat. So they're both Krishna, forms of Krishna. Maybe we should give someone else a chance. Shama Rupa is there also.
You were explaining two types of services to spiritual master. One is regular seva and second is paricharya. So are both of them mandatory?
Well, if you know, the paricharya is the kind of bapu seva.
Because ISKCON is now really... In ISKCON, general now gurus are having many disciples and it's really difficult to do paricharya.
Because we're a preaching movement, you know, we're going to have, yeah, it'll be like that. Yeah. Well, I didn't get a chance to do that with Prabhupada, so I think that, I mean, it would be nice, and certainly it does help. But also, and I'm still here, for whatever that's worth. For whatever I'm worth, then. But I'm still here, and I never did any paricharya. So, I can't say that it's absolutely mandatory to exist. I think that the disciple should want to do that. If he gets a chance, and or if he's even worse, if he's asked to do it and he doesn't do it, then it would be an offense. If he doesn't desire to do it, then he won't get a chance to do it. But if he at least he desires to do it, then it's possible it may happen. He can get a chance, and that will help him. But all the service is service to the guru, and the guru is one also. So, like when we serve Prabhupada, we're also serving Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. Or we're serving one guru in ISKCON, it's similar to serving, it's the same as serving another guru in ISKCON. Because the guru is one, they're all representing Krishna. And so we're serving Krishna through various agents. So, anyway, we should try to do that. But as I said, obviously it's not absolutely mandatory, but I think it's mandatory if you get a chance, then you should do it. Because otherwise it means that you have a problem. You're envious of the guru or whatever. Then that's a serious problem.
Can you do it for Shiksha Guru? Because we have preaching mission. So preaching mission is actually, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also says that there will be many Shiksha Gurus will be there and with them will be connected to it.
Can't this particular service be done for them? Because some opportunity should be there for the person to do some personal service to a spiritual preceptor.
Yeah. It can be done like that, yeah. Because both are representatives of Krishna. One is... what is it? One is Sarup and one is Swabhav of Krishna. So one is manifestation of Madan Mohan, Diksha Guru, and another is manifestation of Govinda Dev, the Shiksha Guru. So they're both, you know, they're both representing Krishna. But the Shiksha Guru has to give faith in the Diksha Guru also. So, and he's generally seen as a kind of supportive person to the Diksha Guru. In our case, sometimes, you know, Prabhupada is also our Shiksha Guru. And because he is the founder Acharya and Mahabhagavat, so then sometimes he may also have more prominence in the life of the disciple than even the Diksha Guru. Especially if the Diksha Guru doesn't spend much time with him, or even more importantly, if he doesn't give much instruction to him, then Prabhupada's Shiksha becomes very, very essential for that person. But wherever we get Shiksha from, then we can take that, as long as it's not contradicting our relationship with the Diksha Guru. And in ISKCON, since the Diksha Gurus are like representing Prabhupada, so then Prabhupada can't be contradicting the Diksha Guru that we have, because the Diksha Gurus must follow Prabhupada. So, but that's also a deep topic that has a lot of nuances and things. So. Yes.
You mentioned just like the Karma Sannyasis are there, if they are not purified and they take up the Sannyas order. And in that time, they find trouble and they cannot give up also, because scripture doesn't recommend Vandashi. Yeah. But what we can say about the Bhakti school, in that those who take to the renounced order,
what can we say about it? What if they take the Sannyas and then they feel some desires? Well, for us, it's slightly different, although it's similar, because our sannyasis are actively working, you know. Whereas in the Jnana school, or in the study of karma and Jnana, which we're studying now, when the person takes karma sannyas, there's no such activities. Our sannyasis are working for the mission. They're traveling. Their work is also generally very brahminical. They're traveling, they're teaching and preaching and counseling and giving seminars, usually. But some of them may be involved with management. You know, they may be running, they may be GBCs or running certain temples. They have to go to meetings and they have to talk with people. Like this, they're also busy. But generally their work is either preaching or training people in philosophy. So their work isn't to get amass money so that they can enjoy. And if that happens, then they can fall down. Like there was, you know, this Surabhi Maharaj who built the Krishna Balaram temple. He was living in Delhi some years ago. He started doing business, painting business and like that. And he got too much involved with this. And then he fell down. I mean, that's an example of a sannyasi getting too much involved with karma. Obviously, he had some desires for wealth, beauty, opulence, and he got personally involved. It wasn't just some disciple that he told to do some business like that. He himself was involved in the business. And that kind of work just distracts the mind of the sannyasi. Because his level is high, so he can't work on the lower platform. It causes a disruption in the internal energies of the person. The purity is very high, so he has to keep a very brahminical kind of behavior. I don't know what else to say about that. I guess there's a lot of, again, another topic which is kind of unlimited. Did you wanted to hear about any specific thing?
Yeah. It's usually called them that they are fall down. It's karma sannyasi. There is a fall down.
Right. One
so, in case of
the sannyasi
bhakti school, that's what.
Also, it's called fall down or it's not
fall down? No, it's also fall down. Vantashi. Yeah. But better to fall down for the sannyasi and continue practicing devotional service, which will bring him to, you know, which will purify that those desires and bring him once again actually to the platform of real sannyas, than for the person to just go away and give up. So, and anyway, in any case, Krishna, he recommends that we continue on the lower platform until the purity is, you know, very strong and the realization is very strong, until one takes that step. So that principle we can follow. And especially we've also seen many people, they prematurely take sannyas and then they fall down. In Kali Yuga it's very difficult, especially in the West. And anyway, Pune is also becoming westernized. So, right? Bombay and Pune. I guess it's because this is the western part of India. It's closer to the west. Because I usually stay in Vrindavan and I never see, you know, women walking around with jeans and t-shirts there. You don't see that. Whatever. You don't see kind of movies and all those things. Of course, it's a holy place. That's, you know, people who want to enjoy it, they're not going to go to Vrindavan. They go to downtown Bombay or Delhi or something like that. Or Pune, downtown Pune. Something more? Yes.
The last section of chapter 4, practice of transcendental knowledge, it is really difficult for me to understand how Nishkam Karma Yoga acts like a blazing fire and purifies. Because you say, Om Pavitra Pavitrova, it is basically that the smaran of the Supreme Lord, that purification takes place. So, if the Nishkam Karma Yogi understands the Supreme Lord, then he is a Bhakti Yogi. If he doesn't understand, then what is the fire that purifies?
Well, he's sacrificing the fruits of his work, so that's the yajna, and in yajna, that's fire. Just like when we do a yajna, there's fire. So that's the purifying agent, is the sacrifice. His mind may not be fully absorbed in God, but at least he has some sense of God, depending on the individual. It may vary from person to person. But as he develops, then that increases more and more. His intention, because the activities of Nishkam Karma Yogi are all yajna, because he's giving up all the fruits of his work. So it's like he's doing a day-to-day yajna, a daily yajna. So that's purifying. Then he gets knowledge. And as he gets knowledge, then he becomes more renounced, more sense control, more mind control. Then he can think of God more. And then gradually he'll meet a Vaishnava and then be converted to the pure practice of Bhakti Yoga, because he's coming so close to that then he, in bhakti, he will be remembering Krishna. At least more. At least his practice of sadhana will be more to remember the Lord.
Whom does he offer his fruits to? And Bhagavad Gita, there's a temple and there are devotees. But are there temples of the Brahman or Paramatma? Who does he offer the fruits to actually? Some conception of the sutra, what is that?
Well, Krishna's just giving sutras, he's not giving histories here, you know. But I would imagine that, yeah, either temples in general to Brahmins, or if they're Brahmins, then they have Shalagram Shila. And they may perform some yajnas or offering food to the Shalagram and then distributing it. That's generally what people do. They, distribute prasadam. It's been a traditional form of sacrifice, a way to engage one's wealth. And building temples like that. It's just atheism is stronger. And so then thinking of God is less. But still there's something which is enlightening, which brings one to the mode of goodness. And from that point, it's a lot easier to think of God. So even if the person's doing altruistic activities, he's like preparing his heart and his consciousness for thinking of God. And it's just a matter of time that he will do that. He will think of God. And if the person's doing Bhagavad Arpita Nishkam Karma, then he's already doing it with that aim. So that's the purifying thing. That's the fire.
What is the motivating factor for Nishkam Karma Yogi?
The which factor?
Motivating factor.
Oh.
Prabhupada talks about asa and anodi. So a fruity work
is driving force.
Huh?
What is the driving force?
Yeah.
You know, Prabhupada talks about a materialist, he gets the mundane rasa. But this Nishkam Karma is a very mysterious concept. He doesn't have the higher taste of devotional service. He earns money that he doesn't enjoy. He has a wife, but he doesn't enjoy with her. What is his motivating factor? Very difficult to understand.
Well, whether he's married or not, that's a different matter. But generally, in the mode of goodness, the general driving force is purification, self-purification. And that's also true within our school. When a devotee is at the platform of Nishkam Karma, then he's trying to purify himself. Why? To please Guru and Krishna, to make more advancement, like that. So that's the Nishkam Karma. Also, he wants to, he may also have a guru, you know. He wants to please his guru or his parents, his other Brahmins in the family. He wants to purify himself. He wants to make spiritual progress. But he's not doing bhakti yet. But even in bhakti, that can be the motive for someone in the mode of goodness. In the lower rungs, like in passion, the devotee's motive is to become famous, or people respect him, or get a big position, or power, or wealth. And in the mode of ignorance, the person thinks that, you know, I'm already the best devotee. And in passion, he wants to become the best devotee, or great devotee. And in goodness, he wants to become a good devotee. Goodness, good. In passion, he wants to be great. And in ignorance, he thinks, I'm already great. I'm the greatest. Any other questions? Yeah? Oh, who didn't get a chance? In the back? Yes? In the back.
Karma sannyas, if a person has an adhikar for karma sannyas, then and he is doing karma yoga, then his advancement would be slower.
Maybe a little slower, but not much slower. And anyway, in any case, it's not dangerous. All the acharyas say that the person, it's not an obstruction. He will continue to become more pure. It may be not as fast, but it's not going backwards. But they don't specify that, and that I have seen any comments. Probably, I would, just from my own realization, I would say, yeah, he's going a little slower. But he's still going, you know. Like if your car is driving at 100 kilometers per hour, that's good. But if it's going at 60 or 70, that's also good. But if there's a traffic jam and you stop completely, then you're in trouble, right? But if you're going 60 or 70, it's also all right. That's okay. Because at least you're going. You're moving forward.
So, Vishishyate is in what sense? When Krishna says karma yoga?
It means it's better, it means it's safer, it's easier. It's safer and easier. Good question.
That is in case when the heart is not pure,
Vishishyate. Well, you know, it's like Krishna is talking to Arjuna. So, okay, so in that case, the heart is not pure. I mean, because Arjuna is not playing the role of a, you know, Maharishi or something. I don't know, it's hard for me to say that it's only better in the case when the person's heart is not completely pure. Because, I mean, I would be speculating to say that, but I haven't seen any statements like that. It's kind of like better to just go with what we have than try to, well, what about this point? Okay, well, that's not. He said they're both good. But he's also described that there's two levels of sannyas. That is when you renounce the fruits. And then later, when you're more renounced, you renounce the work itself. So it's actually higher. So in that sense, karma sannyas is superior. Right? So I guess we could extrapolate and conclude that, yes, if the heart is pure, then this statement is doesn't hold true. Karma yoga vishishyate. But because so many people are so eager to renounce their work and take formal sannyas, and so many people fall down from that position, that Krishna says this, you know, karma yoga vishishyate, because it's safer and it's easier. And then when you're really, really ready, then you can take karma sannyas. That's, I think, his, you know, mood and presentation.
Yeah. In relation to this, you mentioned in Gitamrita, if somebody's heart is not clean, then you should work to clean the heart.
Yes.
If one's heart is clean, then one should work to set the example.
Krishna gives the example of Janak Maharaj.
Right.
So how Vishishtha is again doubtable?
But that statement is promoting Nishkam Karma Yoga. Right? That, what you just, the statement in Gitamrita, which is from Baladeva Vidyabhushan's commentary, he says that that is just supporting the statement of Krishna Karma Yoga Vishishyate. Because if the heart is not pure, you work to purify it. That's Nishkam Karma Yoga. And if the heart is pure, you can continue to work to set an example for others, which is also good. Because if you renounce your work, then other people will try to do that and copy you, imitate you. And that causes a disturbance. Therefore, Karma Yoga Vishishyate. So the people who are like involved, who are famous, who are leaders, they should do Karma Yoga. And those who are renunciates and are living in the caves of the mountains and the forests, people don't see them. You know what I mean? And even if they walking through the caves or, you know, the mountains or the forest and they see somebody sitting and meditating or whatever, then he's going to think that, wow, this is strange, and I don't think I could never do that. Right? You know? But if the person's living in the society and he renounces his work, and then people who are lazy, they don't want to work. So they think, yeah, that looks pretty cool. I'd like to do that too, you know. And I can leave my wife and I can give up my job and I don't have to do anything. I just put on saffron and haribo. You know? And we see, you know, people do that. They sit on the side of the road with all the gods and collect some taka, you know. Some paisa from everyone, enjoy some, you know, ganja and bong and some chapatis. And so therefore Karma Yoga Vishishyate. for the human beings, for the society, it's better. If someone's actually so renounced, then they can go off somewhere and do their Gyana Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga. Hare Krishna. Thank you, Prabhus. So now we will end our discussion for today. I wish you a happy Japati Yagya. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki.